Hello and welcome to the third episode of Death and Taxes, a weekly podcast by the private client team at Burgess Salmon. My name is Tim Williams and I'm a tax and trust lawyer in the private client team. And together with my tax and trust colleagues Guy Broadfield and Edward Hayes, we'll discuss a range of issues facing clients and professionals alike. Each episode will be joined by specialist lawyers from around the firm to bring you our views on important topics for private clients. In today's podcast, we will discuss the proposed reforms to capital gains tax put forward by the Office of Tax Simplification. And Guy and I will be joined by Helen McLeod, who sits with us in the private client team with a specialism in UK tax and trusts advice to UK and international clients.
So I think it would be fair to say that as we stand now, we're in a very different fiscal landscape to this time a year ago. And you constantly see in the papers talk about government borrowing and just how we might come to pay for COVID and all of that sort of good stuff. And one thing that captures the public's imagination is changes to the tax system to pay for that. And over the course of the last few months, you've seen it in the papers, you've heard on the radio, you've had the Wealth Tax Commission report come out in December suggesting a wealth tax. You've had speculation about possible changes or increases to income tax or VAT and national insurance. But those are discussions for another time. And today's pod, of course, focuses on capital gains tax. And it was back in November, or October, November last year, that the Office of Tax Simplification published their report into how you might change the capital gains tax regime. So, I mean, Tim, in broad terms for our listeners, perhaps you could just explain what the OTS is and why they were looking, or indeed are looking, at capital gains tax, and who told them to put forward some ideas.
Well, so in terms of what the OTS is, it's the Office of Tax Simplification, and as the name suggests, their remit is to examine the tax system and suggest ways in which it might work better. And obviously in the world of tax, that means quite a lot of different things. And at various points over the last couple of years, the Chancellor has asked the OTS to look at different taxes. So it was asked to look at inheritance tax, which resulted in two reports over the last couple of years. And then in July this year, the Chancellor asked the OTS to look at capital gains tax. And he asked them to identify opportunities relating to administrative and technical issues, as well as areas where the present rules can distort behaviour or do not meet their policy intent. So it's quite a broad brief the OTS have been given there. But this is sort of reasonably typical of what the OTS is asked to do. So the OTS has now produced the first of two reports. And the first one is looking at policy design and principles underpinning capital gains tax. And we're expecting the second one in 2021, which will look at some tech and administrative points. But so this report is rather more high level and covers quite a lot of ground. But we thought today it's probably worth drawing out only a few of those points, and I think the main points that we've thought bear some additional scrutiny are the proposals around aligning the tax rates with income tax. That's quite a big point because the rates are quite far apart at the moment. The removal of what's known as the CGT uplift on death, and then also there's some changes afoot to business asset disposal relief, which most people know as entrepreneurs relief. So, I mean, looking first at the rates point, I mean, Helen, do you want to talk us through what the OTS is talking about there?
Sure. So this is the thing that really caught most of the headlines, and that's the proposal to align rates for CGT and income tax. So currently income tax is charged at between 20 and 45%, whereas CGT is charged at 10 or 20% or 18 or 28% in for gains on residential property. So the gap is currently quite wide. And the concern of the OTS is that this differentiation in rates leads to a distortion of taxpayer behaviour. So in other words, it encourages taxpayers to arrange their affairs so that income can be realised as or recharacterised as capital gains. So the report sort of highlighted that while this could raise potentially significant sums for the revenue, before implementing any changes, it would be necessary for the government to consider a few main issues. So what the primary one is really what we do about inflationary gains. So generally, it's accepted that tax shouldn't be charged on any part of a gain which has arisen solely because of inflation. And by that, I mean, so if you purchase an asset for £100 and sell it for 10 years later, it might have increased to, say, £150 simply because of the inflation that's occurred during that period. It's not really a true gain in the sense that it doesn't create any monetary benefit for the owner. And in the past, it has been suggested that these inflationary gains are addressed by a combination of the low rates of CGT, which we have as against income tax, and also the currently fairly generous annual exempt amount that stands at £12,300 at the moment. It should sort of be noted that actually as part of this report, the OTS have also suggested lowering that significantly, but currently it's £12,300, and it increases each year in line with inflation. So that's, it's sort of been argued in the past that that takes into account the inflationary effect. However, sort of a fairly arbitrary approach because it doesn't actually consider the amount of gains which have arisen or how long the asset has been held for. So instead, we could consider having like a form of indexation on capital gains. Prior to 1998, there was an indexation allowance on capital gains for this very purpose of addressing the inflationary gains issue, but it was scrapped by Gordon Brown because it was too complicated. And of course, while that might happen again, the OTS have suggested that modern technology could assist with it nowadays, so it might be a more practical approach in the modern era.
But it's still a problem for them to try and consider as part of the more practical, you know, you can talk about principle, but it's all in, the devil is in the detail, as we all know, as tax lawyers. I mean, I guess in terms of distortion of behaviour, taxpayers will arrange their affairs in the way that they think is most tax efficient in most cases. So, I mean, does it mean that if you've got alignment of income and CGT rates, that people might be more willing or look at exploring putting assets into companies and therefore their assets being subject to corporate tax rates instead of income tax or CGT?
Absolutely. And corporation tax rates are significantly lower. They're 19% than income tax rates. Currently, obviously, that's quite similar to CGT rates. So it doesn't really affect thinking necessarily from that perspective. But if CGT rates were to increase dramatically, there would be far more of an incentive to try and arrange things to make use of corporation tax, for example, by putting things into family investment companies. Which are a type of company that wealthier families can hold their affairs through. Obviously, that option would only be open to those with greater resources, so you would have to consider the equity of having that as an option.
Yeah, and it's fair to say there have always been, and there are some taxpayers who operate in industries, thinking of private equity industry, where, you know, a lot of their structuring is based on trying to make sure that they achieve a capital gain rather than income by way of the sort of their remuneration. So I assume that's an example of an industry that would look closely at the rules and possibly look to make use of corporate vehicles going forward if that was the lower tax environment for them, just as they do at the moment in terms of trying to make sure that what they get is classified as capital rather than income in their private equity structures.
Sure, and the OTS did address this boundary issue, as they call it, between the income tax and CGT rates. And you know, as mentioned, because of this disparity in rates, there is this incentive to recharacterise income as gains. And as you say, Guy, it is common and very legitimate tax planning in many industries. So an example given in the OTS report as well is owner-managed companies, where the owner managers are taxed at low rates if they retain the profits arising from their personal labour and realise these profits on a sale or liquidation of the business, which is charged at corporation tax rates, as opposed to withdrawing them as dividends, which is taxed at income tax rates. So it can sort of distort behaviour in this way and lead them to arranging it so that they only take a salary in the form of income up to a basic rate of tax. And the OTS's view that these boundary issues puts pressure on the income tax and CGT rates and provides sort of greater opportunities for the wealthy to make use of options available to them. But I think it's important to note that part of the reason for these is to encourage entrepreneurial activity and risk taking, which is necessary to build a sort of healthy economy. And so a balance does need to be struck with these issues.
And then, I mean, Tim, to come on to this, the second point you've talked about in terms of what the OTS proposals, possibly the one of even greater application to taxpayers across the board, is the idea that the so-called CGT uplift on death is removed. Tim, do you want to just explain what the CGT uplift is on death, and then Helen talk about what the OTS thinks about it?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, at the moment, essentially, the assets held on death are rebased in value terms at the date of death. So basically, capital gains tax works by taxing the difference in value when you acquire an asset to the value when you dispose of it. And dispose could be by way of sale or gift or various other things. So if an asset value is uplifted at the date of death, you get a current valuation. So if you later dispose of it, you pay less capital gains tax. And that's the general gist of it. The issue that's been identified is whether that leads people to hold on to assets for a longer time to then take advantage of that CGT uplift and sell assets shortly after death with no capital gains tax. So there's a risk of behavior being distorted in that sense. I mean, Helen, did the report draw any more conclusions from it?
It did. It in fact split it into three main recommendations about the CGT uplift. So the first one was that often on death you get this CGT uplift, so you take the assets at the market value as at the date of death, as Tim said, but you can also get an exemption from inheritance tax, for example, if assets pass to a spouse or are within your narrow band. So you end up paying no tax at all. Ultimately, the purpose of the uplift, I think, is to avoid you paying both CGT and inheritance tax. So the report sort of highlights that a lot of people end up paying neither CGT or inheritance tax because of this, because of the exemptions aligned with the uplift. So the first recommendation is that where a relief or exemption from inheritance tax applies, the government should consider removing the capital gains tax uplift on death and instead provide that the recipient of the asset is treated as acquiring it at the base cost of the person who died.
So for example then, Helen, if husband and wife, if we're talking about husband and wife here, husband buys an asset in 1990 for £1,000. He dies in 2020 when it's worth £100,000. Because there'll be no inheritance tax to pay if he leaves it to his wife, rather than the wife having an uplifted base cost of £100,000, she has the £1,000 base cost from 1990. Is that the general idea? So if she sold it, she'd have a much bigger gain to pay tax on.
Yeah, absolutely. So that would ensure that either CGT or inheritance tax is paid rather than neither. So that was the first main recommendation, which would have quite a wide-reaching effect on many people. But then the OTS report did take it further. So the second recommendation was that in addition, the government should consider removing the uplift on death more widely, regardless of the inheritance tax treatment. So every recipient of an asset on death would take it at the base cost of the deceased rather than the market value as at the date of death. The issue with this is that the administrative burden could be really quite high, in that every asset would need to be, you know, have to get the base cost of every asset and pass it along to the relevant recipient. And if they sell it 10, 15 years after the death, it could be quite tricky. So the OTS suggested that for part of this, the executors of the estate, so the people who administer the estate on someone's death, would have to calculate the notional gains that sit within that asset as at the date of death alongside the inheritance tax calculations, which would mean that the person who then later goes on to sell the asset, they'd only have to calculate the part of the gain which had arisen during their ownership. So that was the second point. And then the third and final recommendation with regard to the uplift was that if the government does remove the uplift more widely, it should consider rebasing all assets to a particular point, so you don't have this issue where you have to know the exact date on which every single asset was acquired by the deceased. They said perhaps a good year for this would be the year 2000, on the basis that the Land Registry had started registering quite a lot of properties in the 90s, and it might be easier to assess values as at the year 2000. Query really whether this would solve many of the administrative issues, on the basis that, yes, property you can probably find the value of in year 2000 relatively easily, all other assets you'd probably have significantly more difficulties, particularly as time goes on. So in 2030 and 2040, the value in year 2000 becomes more and more hard to ascertain. And so you might need to keep changing the rebasing year, which would just add to the complexity.
It's just considerable, again, practical difficulties to this that, I mean, particularly to your second point, Helen, the idea that executors would then have to take on this sort of quasi accountancy function in the interests of establishing what a gain was at the time of death to pass that information on. I mean, all well and good if you are advising individuals acting as executors on that, but it's a big burden. There'll be a lot of additional compliance at a time which is already quite administratively difficult.
The cost as well in terms of administering the estate. It's not a small exercise to do this.
And it's worth noting as well, isn't it, that the current there's a current rebasing to 1982 values, which causes enough headaches now that we're nearly 40 years down the line from 1982. So taking an arbitrary date doesn't actually make things any easier, although it notionally reduces the amount of gains, which is the idea.
I mean, perhaps better than leaving it at 82 and saying
quite
and removing the uplift, but still not great. Well, not without some difficulties then, the CGT uplift. I mean, it's worth, as a quick aside, there are also some proposals to abolish one form of relief aimed at investors and entrepreneurs and indeed significantly alter another. Helen, do you want to just quickly touch on those?
Yeah, so I'll start with the one which is the one being abolished or proposed to be abolished is the investors relief. It is a sister to entrepreneurs relief in a way, but the difference is that it, rather than being aimed at entrepreneurs who are involved in a business, it is specifically involved at investors who are not connected to businesses which need to be unlisted trading companies. And the purpose of it was to really encourage investment and enable unlisted companies to access capital. It was only brought in 2016, and to make use of it, you had to have held the asset or held the investments for 3 years from 2016. So you could only claim this relief from the 6th of April 2019. When you did claim it, it would reduce the CGT to 10% up to a lifetime cap of 10 million. Problem is, no one's used it and no one's really interested in using it. And the OTS report basically said that they had no interest at all, and so the government should really consider abolishing it. It seems slightly premature to abolish something when it's only been available for about 18 months.
That said, if you're going to abolish a relief, abolish the one that nobody uses because nobody will complain.
Quite.
Would be the argument. Anyway, and so it's perhaps more importantly, proposals to changes to business asset disposal relief, formerly entrepreneurs relief, to all of us who knew it under that name.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is one which actually is genuinely quite popular, and the take-up's quite high on it. The OTS think that it is mistargeted if its aim is to stimulate business investment and risk-taking. And in their view, it's sort of been understood that its other objective should be to provide a specific relief when business owners retire. So on that basis, their view is, if this is the objective, the government should consider sort of reworking it to make it more aligned with this plan. So the suggestions they give are to increase the minimum shareholding, perhaps to 25%. So currently it is 5%, which someone needs to hold in a company in order to qualify for this relief. So they suggest increasing that to 25% so that it's aimed more at owner managers of businesses rather than to the sort of broader class of employees. They've also suggested increasing the holding period, perhaps to 10 years. And again, this is aimed at making it available to people who've built business up over time rather than just being involved for a shorter period. And the final thing they suggest is possibly introducing an age limit as to when you can actually claim it, which would be based on the age limits and pension freedoms, which would make it align with this idea that it's more of a sort of retirement relief rather than a more general, a generally available relief. So quite stark changes there in terms of of how it functions and who can make use of it.
So it's worth noting, Helen, isn't it, that actually Entrepreneurs Relief, as we know it, has been scaled back quite significantly over the last few years, and the scope of it's been narrowed a bit. So the thresholds have come down. It used to be 10 million of gains, a lifetime allowance of 10 million of gains, and now it's down to 1 million, and the ownership periods, etc., have been extended. So it might be that this round of proposals is the sort of nail in the coffin of Entrepreneurs Relief as we know it, and a move back to something that looks a little bit more like retirement relief as we used to know it. But yeah, a significant change in any case.
So, I mean, there are many significant practical consequences of if these proposals are indeed implemented by the government that will affect practitioners and clients alike. And it's probably worth at this point taking a step back and thinking about how likely it is that these changes would be brought in. I mean, clearly, in normal times, the government asks the OTS to review the tax system and suggest changes, and that is all well and good. And as part of an efficient sort of tax system, it's good to review and hopefully improve and change. But I think, you know, we have to look at this review and report in the context of the current public finances. And let's be honest, you know, the OTS has been asked by Rishi Sunak to look at this particular tax in the context of COVID. And there must have been some nod, you'd imagine, from central government to say, feel free to be quite far reaching in your proposals, because, you know, nothing's off the table in terms of tax changes or how we go about paying for all of this. So it's probably in that context that we have to look at the proposals. Now, I mean, do we think that there probably is value in saying, well, these would be quite wide ranging and fundamental changes to the tax system, and maybe the government, the Chancellor's put something out there only to then in practice only change the system a little bit? I don't know, Jed, do you think that's likely?
So as in, he's proposed something that sounds really quite bad, and actually when he doesn't do something that's as bad as he thought it might be, everyone's happy.
Or maybe not happy, but maybe less angry than they otherwise might be. Because I mean, I think one of the things that Helen certainly has very helpfully raised is that changing those broad principles comes with a significant amount of complexity, you know, about aligning rates with income tax, etc. And so if you then practically think, well, that's very difficult, and also it's not really a vote winner, it might not get much traction with the government, or at least with Rishi Sunak on a political level. So, but that doesn't mean that he will do nothing. So do we think at least, for example, rate rises might be possible in the short term? And by short term, I think, you know, from 6th April next year, 2021.
Maybe rather than the alignment with income tax, which is the sort of worst case scenario that everyone's been working to, it might be that there's a rate increase that doesn't go quite as far as up to the full income tax rate, coupled with other recommendations from the OTS that don't go quite as far, but as the OTS suggests, but still increase rates and erode some of the reliefs.
One possibility is that they just go back to the rates of 2016. So previously the rates were 18 and 28%, rather than 10 and 20, and only 18 and 28 for residential property. And when they were actually reduced, it was a bit of a shock. No one was really expecting it and didn't really ask for it. So it might just be that they simply go back up to those slightly higher rates that everyone was quite used to, at least in the first instance. In terms of timings, they could raise rates slightly in 2021. I think any significant changes are more likely to happen from 6 April 2022, just given, as we were saying, these are quite complex changes and quite wide-reaching, and that the draftsman would need time to prepare them properly and then get them passed through government. So I don't think it's an immediate change that we need to be terrified of.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's all, at the end of the day, it's all guesswork and subject to political change and circumstances, of course. Who knows what might happen in the coming months. But I mean, I guess from a practical perspective, to the extent you have transactions that are going on at the moment, it makes sense to accelerate them and make sure they complete before the end of the current tax year, so before 6th April 2021. And to the extent individuals are thinking about making gifts, then that's also a good reason to do it in this tax year, when you know at least what the capital gains tax position will be on those transfers. So that's where we are for the moment with capital gains tax. No doubt there is scope for us to discuss further tax change and reform on future podcasts, not least the novel idea of a wealth tax. But that is a particularly difficult beast, and one that lends itself to perhaps even a special episode.
Thanks again for listening to Death and Taxes, a weekly podcast by the Burgess Salmon private client team. You can find out more about Burgess Salmon and our team at burgess-salmon.com or on our LinkedIn page. Our next episode will cover exit planning for family businesses, so don't forget to subscribe, and thanks again for listening.